Ramsey Solutions presents Chris Brown's True Stewardship.
What if American households today got serious about stewardship? Not some old historic church word and not some fundraising campaign, but true biblical stewardship, managing God's blessings God's way for God's glory.
Welcome to Chris Brown's True Stewardship. Here's your host, Chris Brown.
Coming to you from the headquarters of Ramsey Solutions, this is Chris Brown's True Stewardship, where we talk about the good, the bad, and the not-so-brilliant things that we do in life and with money. We are reclaiming stewardship. God has a lot to say about money and about living this life intentionally for His glory. Much more about that at stewardship.com. Be sure to check it out. Again, that's stewardship.com. Phone lines are open, 866-357-3283. Again, that's 866-357-3283. Well, now we have Barry calling in from Kansas. Barry, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How about you?
I'm very thankful. How can I serve you today?
I bought a new 2013 Toyota, and I bought it new because my father had passed away, and when his property was sold and then divided up, ended up with a little bit of money from it between me and my brothers and my mom. And I know what Dave says about purchasing, buying a new vehicle, and just the desire for a new one came across, so I jumped on it, unfortunately. I ended up going, and I got, for the life of the loan, I got it for zero APR, and I put a large enough amount down on it and made extra payments on it. I owe a little bit less than $12,000 on it. I don't have the money to be able to pay it off all at once, but I was wondering if you thought it would be a good idea. I have enough in my investments, 401 from work and from a previous employer, to be able to take that out and pay it off, and that way I would be completely debt free.
And how much do you have in your retirement?
Well, in the one from previous employer, I have I would say about $28,000. I had talked to them about it, and they told me that I can leave it in there, and it will still draw from how they have it divided up, but they said I can't. I'd have to take it all out at once, and I know that I would be hit with penalties and fees and early withdrawal on it. And they was telling me that out here that they would, I think, take about $7,000 out of it automatically to pay for taxes and all that.
Barry, let me ask you a question. Would you pay $100,000 to me if I paid off your $11,000?
No, sir.
Well, that's what you'd be doing. If you take money out of that, that's what you're going to do. You're going to give up $100,000 in compound interest over the next 10, 15 years, roughly, so that you can pay off $11,000. So my answer is no. Let's not do that. That's not your game plan. You don't want to pull it out of there, okay?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I mean, I see. I totally get the wrestle. I was just swimming with my kids this weekend, and I was swimming just fine. I was just gliding through the water. I'm telling you, I was going to the Olympics. I was amazing. And my little boy, my little 9-year-old, he's a little small. He's like probably only 50 pounds. He jumped on my back. And when he jumped on my back, my ability to swim went to zero. I couldn't swim. So I get the feeling that you right now are trying to get ahead, but you've got this kid on your back. You can't swim. He's all over you, and it's this debt. It's this $11,000 is driving you bananas. I get it. But the best way to get that off of your back is not to borrow or not to take away from your retirement. And the scriptural answer is to get out of debt as soon as possible. So if selling it, and let's say you owe 11, but it's worth 17, and you can get 6 out of it and go buy a $6,000 car, and therefore you're out of debt, then yes, yes, and more yes. Do that as soon as possible.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much for your wisdom.
This email is from Kim. She says, my debt is out of control. My credit score is horrible. I'm under Chapter 13, and I simply don't have enough money to pay it off. My husband is a spender, and I'm a worrier. We make about $5,100 a month. We have payday loans that I'm trying to rid, but it seems never-ending. I did financial peace, but my husband didn't. I'm now considering Chapter 7 because we make money, but we never have enough. My question is, how do I get my husband on board without us having a fight? How do I start the financial talk? Kim, you've got to get him in Financial Peace University. You guys, you've got to be on the same page. And I would find his weak spot and bribe him. You know where that weak spot is. You use it for other things. You know how to get him to do some work around the house. You know how you get him to do things that you want him to do, how to mow the yard, or you know how. Find his weak spot and bribe him. There's such tremendous value in a third-party voice. You need a third-party voice. In this instance, it's a Financial Peace University to speak into his life because, let's face it, folks, we've got selective hearing when it comes to our familiar voices in our lives. And unfortunately, a lot of times that's our spouse and our kids and our bosses. They become too familiar. So you've got to get that third-party voice to speak into his life. You've got to get on the same page. Right now, one of you is rowing sideways and one of you is rowing straight ahead. It's impossible for you to reach your goals when you're rowing two different directions. So I would say address the what if for him. What does life look like for him? Paint two different pictures for him for two different futures. What does this future look like over here? And what does this future look like over here? You paint those pictures for him, but make sure that you somehow can expose him to Financial Peace University so you guys can be on the same page. All right. In Detroit, we've got Sally calling in. Sally, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am doing very, very well. How can I help you?
Well, I'm in a bit of a pickle, and I'm hoping you can help. I work as a teacher at a school for students with moderate to severe autism, and I love my job. However, I've just found out that I'm required to have taken 6 credits towards my endorsement in autism by this September, or I will be unable to teach a second year in my classroom. I've worked with a local university, and they're willing to let me take the classes, but I don't have enough money in my bank to pay for those classes right now. My parents have agreed to help and loan me the money with no interest, so I don't have to take out an official student loan. Mm-hmm. So my question is it okay to take a short-term loan from my parents in order to get myself through so I can teach a second year in my job?
I don't like it, especially with family. I'm never going to endorse people borrowing. I know no interest, that sounds good, but the borrower is slave to the lender regardless of interest rate. They're going to pretty much own you when it comes to that. You're going to feel that pressure when you come over for dinner. You're going to feel that. And even if they're being nice and they're being kind and they're not throwing it in your face, you're still going to feel that pressure. I would boldly ask them, would you invest in me? And maybe they'll give you the money. And then you might pay it back because you want to later, or maybe pay it back in a different form. But there's no promise to it. There's no promise on the other side. So that might be an option for you. Also, with it being during summer, you got between now and September, it might be, you know, taking a quarter-time job or a part-time job to pay for it yourself. I don't know if you work year-round or if you have the summers off.
I am going to be teaching summer school as well.
Okay. Okay.
But I don't know if that will be enough to cover it because I have to pay for my classes before I start them.
Yeah, I would look into other options and see if they would invest in you is the way I would word it and talk to them about your predicament. They obviously see that you're a hard worker and that this was unforeseen circumstances. And I just know the way my daughter is. If my daughter would come to me and bat her eyelashes, I think I'd be investing in her, but I don't know their scenario and their financial position. But so my advice to you would be to borrow a slave to lender still in this scenario. You can do it if you want to. It's not a sin issue. It's just a wisdom issue, whether you want that hanging over your head. And then Proverbs 26 would be my advice to them. Don't be one of those who shakes hands in a pledge, especially when it's family. So I don't know. Hopefully it's easier for you to maybe get a modified schedule with summer school, I'm sure. But maybe it's a second job. I just think you're going to enjoy the schooling more if you're not owing people money, especially family. But I don't know all the variables. But yeah, I'm never going to recommend borrowing money, even with no interest. All righty?
All righty. Thank you.
Thank you, Sally. Our next caller is John calling in from Washington. John, how are you?
I'm good, sir. Thank you.
How can I help you?
Well, I have an L&I claim for 12 years, and I finally got a decision through Superior Court, and I'm going to get a large chunk of change, probably about $75,000 to $80,000. And I'm just kind of concerned, can the federal government tax you on this lawsuit that Labor and Industries is paying me?
No. If it's has to do with injury,
yes.
The answer is no. No. The reason for the money, the intention of the money is to cover previous costs. It's not really necessarily an income. It's more of a reimbursement. That's how it's treated.
Okay. Now, I'm kind of curious. I just don't want to put the money in an account. What do you think of tax-free bonds, sir?
I don't even like them at all, not even a little bit.
You don't? The
interest you're going to get on that is not even going to cover inflation.
Okay.
So let's look at some other options. Are you currently in debt at all? Do you have any consumer debt?
Absolutely none.
Way to go. Good. How about savings? You got any money in savings?
Oh, not a lot. Probably $1,500.
Okay. And what are your monthly expenses?
Probably $2,000 a month.
I would put $6,000 to $12,000 in a money market account and make it liquid and accessible. Make sure that it's available. It's not your normal savings, but you're going to get like another 0.1% by going into money market, but you won't lose any liquidity. So you want to have that available as almost like your self-insurance. If life throws you a curveball, you got money available and you don't have to swipe a card to get through life. So that 6 to 12, you don't ever touch. It's called an emergency fund. And you just keep that there and it's not going to gain any interest and don't let it drive you nuts. If you put $12,000 in there, next year it's going to say $12,010. Don't worry about it. It's good sleep at night money.
Okay.
Okay. Then the remainder of this other $68,000, I would put in a Roth IRA.
Okay.
A Roth, not a normal traditional, but a Roth.
Right.
If you don't qualify for a Roth, if you happen to make too much money for a Roth, then a traditional's fine. You can only do that $5,500 a person, $11,000 a year for a couple. Then over that, you're just going to do your basic growth stock mutual funds. And I like front-loaded on the fees. And do you own your house outright, or do you have a mortgage on it?
Nope, I own it.
Oh, you're a legend.
Lock, stock, and barrel.
There you go. I love it. So that's what I do. I put it in growth stock mutual funds. How much do you have invested already?
Oh, about $30,000. I lost a big chunk of change, though, when the government foreclosed on Washington Mutual. I was apprehensive, and I had a friend of mine who was a big banker and said, oh, don't worry about Washington Mutual. It's good. So I had $47,000 I lost when the government foreclosed on them. So that kind of hurt me quite substantially.
Yeah. Well, the reason why I like the growth stock mutual funds is for our listeners as well is the diversity piece. It's diverse. It gets good returns. But at the same time, you stay diverse. And I think it's a good hybrid of those two things. It's good returns. You know, it's not like your elite returns, but it's low risk. So you got good returns, you got low risk, you're diversified. That's why I love growth stock mutual funds. It's a good long-term investment that you are going to win in the long term. If you want to make, you know, an additional 100 grand off of your 68 grand in 6 months, that's not the vehicle.
Okay.
But if you want a good, safe, risk-averse producing mutual fund, our investment, then that's the one that you want. So just make sure you put it in there for long term, not short term.
Okay, one other crazy question.
Uh-huh.
Silver.
Oh, no, uh-uh.
Okay.
No, remember, diversity. You want to diversify, diversify, diversify.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your help.
Yeah, let me help you too. One more thing, because you're obviously in a good spot, you know, with your finances. And so I want to make sure that those that have good finances and they're about to get even better is that we always keep that thankful spirit. We're not entitled. God has blessed you with this $80,000. Some people go through the same exact process that you went through, but don't get it.
Oh, absolutely.
So I want to make sure that you have a very thankful spirit. 1 Thessalonians 5:18, in everything, give thanks, for this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus. A lot of times we are asking about God's will. What's God's will? What's God's will? Well, right here, maybe if we just focused on this first, then we can go further. In everything, give thanks, for this is God's will for you. God's will for us? Well, it's to be thankful. Thank you so much for the call, John.
You bet. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Now is the perfect time to start living smart with your money. You just need a plan that works. Financial Peace University offers practical and easy to follow steps that have helped over 2.5 million families get out of debt and learn how to handle money God's way. You can take Financial Peace University in a local class or as a home study or online. Take the first step towards changing your future with Financial Peace University and visit stewardship.com. That's stewardship.com. Or call us at 866-357-3283. Again, that's 866-357-3283.
You're listening to Chris Brown's True Stewardship. If you have a question for Chris, email him at chrisonair@stewardship.com or call him at 866-357-3283. That's 866-357-3283. And now let's continue with Chris Brown's True Stewardship. Here's Chris.
Got an email here. Dear Chris, my fiance believes in tithing. I am a Catholic, so I believe in offerings. We have about $100,000 of debt between the two of us, and likely we'll have a $94,000 income. She's a teacher, and I'm a government accountant. Any ideas that we can do to roll up our sleeves and truly accomplish our goals? Yeah, I think you need to respect each other's view financially. Respect each other's views spiritually. You need to respect her views for offering, and she needs to respect your views when it comes to tithing. And so that's exactly what you do. You're going to tithe and you're going to give offerings. You're going to do both. And you're also going to pay off your debts really, really fast. And with a $94,000 income, which is pretty darn good, I'm not sure where you're riding in from, but for most parts of the country, that's a pretty darn good income. And you should be able to do all of those things. Paying off your debts and you're getting aggressive, you should cut in all areas except for tithing. And in her circumstance, when she believes in offerings, it needs to be in offerings as well. And with a $94,000 income, not sure where you're riding in from, but in most geographic regions, that's a pretty good income to attack those debts without digging into your tithes and digging into your offerings. You're listening to Chris Brown's True Stewardship. And from Seattle, we have Shanta calling in. Shanta, how are you?
Well, Chris, how are you?
Very, very well. How can I help you today?
My husband and I, my question is, should we pursue a lawsuit or not? And we're interested in your opinion, because we know God wants us to seek guidance from wise people, and we've received guidance from a lot of people around us, but understand that they could possibly be biased. So we're seeking your counsel, okay. Hoping that it will be a nice mediator.
Yeah.
My husband and I put an offer on a home. The home was owned by a gentleman, and when he passed away, he deeded it to his son. The son had many judgments and liens against his name, and to try to avert paying those liens, when he sold the house, he deeded it to his mother. So his mother now owns the home. When we signed the contract, we signed it with her to sell the home, and one of their friends was in the title business and said since the mother owned the home, none of the liens or judgments would be taken out of the profits of the home. However, when we started to go through the title process, it was obvious there was no way we could close on the home until those liens and judgments were paid out of the profits from they would make from the house. And so they started to actively look for other buyers and sell the property out from under us, without giving us our earnest money back. And so my husband and I sought, you know, the legal counsel of a lawyer saying, what can we do? They aren't talking to us anymore and they have our earnest money. And his suggestion was to sue. So we are in a quandary. You know, we've tried to make peace and trying to work through this. And we went through a lawsuit last year, being sued by someone who we tried and tried to come to a mutual understanding with. And they decided to sue us. So we absolutely know how it feels to be sued.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's good for our listeners to hear you explain a little bit. Well, how does it feel to get sued?
It's awful. We got sued the day I got out of the hospital from hip surgery. They didn't know that. But it was quite an emotional thing to basically threatened with the cost of paying all their legal fees and, you know, and having a poor name when we had really just tried to reach an agreement between the two parties, and they decided they didn't want to talk anymore, so they sued us. So it's a horrible feeling.
Yeah, you know, before we go any further with this conversation, I want to make sure that we don't put suing somebody all in the same, we lump them all in the same category, because suing can be very, very ugly, and sometimes it can just be, you know, two folks that did not come to an agreement. And the victim or the person who felt like they were the victim in a circumstance is asking for in this scenario, it would be getting your earnest money back plus all the fees it would take to get your earnest money back. And that could technically be called suing, but that's not really the heartbeat behind what you're doing if you were to go that
right.
route. So I think to let you off the hook a little bit on that, on feeling, I can sense that you feel like it's almost a wrong thing to do. And in some scenarios, if you spill McDonald's coffee on your lap and sue them because they have hot coffee, obviously that's the suing in the bad form. That means that you're the one that spilled the coffee. They shouldn't have to pay for it.
Right.
But this is different. Now, let me ask you, were you using a real estate broker?
We were, yes.
Are they still involved in the process and wanting to help?
You know, the home is two doors down from my parents, and so we worked out the deal ourselves, and the real estate broker was only involved to write the contract for us. She doesn't represent either party. That's why when things started to go shady, I went immediately to the lawyer to get his advice, because we weren't being represented.
When you went to an attorney, is that your closing attorney, or is that like a different lawyer? Is that a civil lawyer?
No, it was the real estate professional.
Okay. What's your estimated cost to get the money back if you were to take them to court? Do you know that number?
No, he couldn't give us that number because he wants us to sue to get the house because they aren't performing on the contract. So he believes that we can get the house.
Okay.
Because they aren't executing on the contract.
Your closing attorney is going to know more details than I'm going to. But for me, based on the way contracts are written, you do have an out because there's obviously undisclosed information. You should be able to get your earnest money back. Now, whether they give it to you or not, doesn't look like they're going to, so it looks like you're going to have to take them to court, which I think that you would win based on what you've told me. But before you ever take them to court, try as hard as you can to get them to see the light before you have to go there.
Okay.
And you probably already have a little bit, but I would go even further, and I would approach it from this angle. Let me throw you the golden rule out there, the golden rule of treating others like you'd want to be treated. So try to look at it from their point of view. Where are they right now? They've obviously got a mess on their hands. They've got things going on in their life, and they're expecting a harsh word from you. But if you come in, Proverbs 15:5, a soft answer turns away wrath. It's amazing how that happens. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. So if you can use Proverbs 15:1, I've seen this in my past, even in real estate negotiations, where they're not expecting that soft answer, and they're like, wow. Well, and somehow it softens their heart, and they're like, they see everything from a compromise perspective, and, you know, let's meet in the middle, let's make this thing work. It's amazing how that works in negotiations. So I would do that. And then if it doesn't work where they give you the earnest money back, then I think you still keep that soft tone. But just so you guys know, I don't really want to do this, and this isn't a threat. I'm not being mean, but I really do. We feel like we deserve that earnest money back, so we're going to have to get a third party involved. In this scenario, it happens to be a court. But I don't want you to feel like we're being combative. We really just want to see this thing get settled. If you have that tone, I think you get a lot further. Your closing attorney says that they think that you can still get the house. I don't agree with that. I think you can get out of your earnest money and get your earnest money back. I don't know if you can get the house. But, you know, he knows more variables than I do. But I think first things first, you can see if you can get the earnest money back or the house. But that's a minimum, is getting your earnest money back. But a couple things for our listeners. I would try as hard as you can not to put that much money down on earnest money unless you're like your back's against the wall. That's a lot of money to put down. And secondly, anytime you use a discount broker, all this talk that we're doing right now, they should be doing this with the closing attorney. They should be fighting this fight, and you shouldn't have to do that. But I know there's pros. You're not having to pay that 3%. I get it. But these are the kind of things that can happen. And this is the reason why you get title insurance as well. Not you, but they should have got title insurance and all that stuff. But anyway, just a couple things for our listener. But that's what I would do. A soft answer turns away wrath, and I would try as hard as you can to avoid. But I wouldn't feel guilty about suing them. You know, you don't want to go after $300,000 in damages because it's ruined your life and you've got emotional trauma. That's extreme. But I think you try to get your 15 grand back and treat them with kindness along the way. Okay?
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time, Chris.
That wraps up this edition of Chris Brown's True Stewardship, brought to you by Ramsey Solutions. Now, this is normally the point in radio shows where the show host asks you, the show listener, for your financial support. But we're not going to do that. We're here as a free service, but in order to be able to keep providing this free service, we need you to help by telling your friends and family to, one, listen to the show, two, check out stewardship.com, and three, would you also consider leaving us a review or a rating on iTunes? Thank you so much for helping us spread the word. It's been an honor to serve you today. As always, let's stay connected at Chris Brown On Air on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Today, we have been reminded that God has a lot to say about money. So, until next time, let's continue to manage His blessings, His way, and for His glory. God bless you.